is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Dion Waiters, this is your city. I can't believe it, man. A three-pointer to end the game, it just had... They didn't need a three-pointer. That, to me, is the best thing about it. You just stare down Klay Thompson, and he's just like, I'm taking this. And he took it, and he drained it. I mean... Dion Waiters, 33 points. The Heat beat the Golden State Warriors 105-102. Dion Waiters was the best player on the floor. I don't care about Curry. I don't care about Durant, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson. I don't care about any of them. Dion Waiters was the best player on the floor tonight. That was amazing.
That was. He combined for more points than Steph Curry and Draymond Green put together, which is kind of saying something. I mean... For him to rise up like that, to meet the challenge, to knock it down as time wound up. And it was so, the whole play wound up so perfectly. They had, 10 seconds left. He's slowly walking the ball up court. And of course, Eric Spoelstra is having a conniption on the sidelines, waving him up, saying, come on, go, speed up. And he finally kind of jogs a little bit more intensely. And you're right. He's standing there at the 3-point line with Klay Thompson, all of 6'7", 6'8" staring at him. And confidently rises up, gets just enough to get the shot over Klay, and knocks it down, and then pulls off one of the greatest poses after a clutch shot in NBA history.
The Run DMC pose. It was amazing.
All right, and then to say the whole time that he knew the shot was going in, the post-game interview with Jason Jackson, that was ridiculous.
It was absolutely insane. I have the clip pulled up here, and I want to play it really quick, so here it is. It's just because Eric Reed's call on here was pretty fantastic.
In the hands of Waiters, 3 seconds left for three in the win. Yes! Dion has done it!
Oh, my.
I mean, just amazing.
I love the ironic laugh from Tony Fiorentino there. Like, he can't.
Just the,
Either he's been listening to our podcast, or he's stayed away from the Waiters Kool-Aid. But either way, it's just like, this is unbelievable. I can't believe what I just saw. And he laughs it off. It was hilarious. And there's so much. And then afterwards, pointing down at the court, a la Dwayne Wade, saying, "This is my something." It looks like
said
city.
He said either this is my city or this is my shit. But either way. He's pointing at the floor, you're right. And so he's saying, whatever this is, it's mine now. All of this is mine now. And Dion Waiters, it is yours now. You can have it. I mean, 33 points in back-to-back games. Both of them are wins. I mean, this is crazy. Like, that was... I can't even... I know that I'm making absolutely no sense, and you're doing a better job making sense than I am. I just can't even, like, feel my face. Like, I don't even know... What's going on here? Just because you and I had been on that Dion Waiters, and I don't want to make it about us, but we will a little bit. We had been on the Dion Waiters bandwagon, not since the beginning of the season, but since he was signed to the Miami Heat. In fact, even earlier.
Before.
When we
brought him to the team. Yeah, he finally hurt us. Yeah,
you're welcome, Heat fans. Like, without this, the Heat would not have just won the NBA Finals. So, it's... So this was pretty fantastic, and this also shameless plug. This is great timing for my little Dion Waiters piece that's going to be coming out in Miami Heat Mag. I will be sure to share that on Twitter. But in that article, he had in the interview, he had been talking about, not to give so much of it away, but the process of him getting back onto the court, and even. You know, he missed 20 games with a groin tear. And even before that, he had been playing through it, he had said. And that's not – that groin tear, that kind of came out of nowhere for a lot of people. The news just kind of sprang up on people as the Heat injuries have been doing all season.
Right.
But he had mentioned he had been playing through it the whole time. He finally feels healthy, and it is clear, like, he is finishing better. He is getting to the rim even better. He's spraying out to the corners and finding open shooters with incredible efficiency. Deion Waiters is playing out of his mind. This is the best basketball he's played of his whole career.
6 of 8. 6 of 8 three-pointers.
His jumper looks fantastic. I mean, those aren't fluky three-pointers that are just getting banked in. The jumper looks smooth. He's getting a lot of lift. He's in great shape. I mean...
Yeah, Cooper Moorhead said that it looks like he had a little bit more arc on that shot.
Yeah.
Clearly that was the case on 6 of 8 and certainly on that last game-winning jumper. But I'm torn because there's part of me that's saying, no, you got to calm down, break down the game, look at it from every possible angle. But part of me says, screw that. I just want to yell at the top of my lungs for Deion Waiters. So, I mean, I woke up everybody in the goddamn neighborhood. Now they know who Deion Waiters is. And they're all promptly moving off the island, let me tell you. And they're trying to get me excommunicated. But
fine. We'll see what happens. It's all worth it for Deion Waiters. I mean,
it is.
The Heat, they played a great game. Deion Waiters was the star. But the Heat, in general, played a fantastic game. I guess we can break it down a little bit more. And I'm sure we'll come back to Deion Waiters here and there. But
absolutely.
But the Heat did a few things that really, I think, shook the Warriors. But to start everything off, the Warriors didn't shoot well. But that's also not... I hate that excuse because it just sounds like some fluky thing. They missed some jumpers, right? Like, they missed... But they were... The Warriors were very visibly shook by the way I think the referees were calling the game. And this is not something that is unique to this game. This has been unique to the Warriors this season, last season, specifically in the NBA Finals when the refs let them play in the NBA Finals and they blew a 3-1 mm-hmm. lead.
Mm-hmm.
This has been an Achilles heel for the Warriors in that they expect to get foul calls, and when they don't get them and when they get banged around, they don't play as well. And the Heat, for whatever, somehow, and the refs, we're going to let them play. Maybe it's home court advantage. Maybe it was the decision. Maybe it's this referee crew. I don't study the referee crews enough to know how they change from crew to crew and how they officiate games crew to crew. But this crew, right, whatever it was, this game said, we're going to let these guys play. And the Heat figured that out pretty early in the game, and they banged them around. They were shouldering guys that did all this. It was a physical game, and the Heat played a better physical game than the Warriors did.
Okay, I have to go back even a little bit further and point out that, you know, obviously Golden State played a tough game yesterday. Well, it wasn't necessarily tough, but it was tough for them because it was an early tip-off in Orlando following that game, which ended pretty early at 2:30. They had to fly to Miami. There's the possibility, as I'm sure people will point out, that they may have acquired the South Beach flu on a Sunday night in Miami, you know, and then, you know, tonight's game. So it's the second night of a back-to-back. I understand there might be some factors. They were also without Andre Iguodala, who is not necessarily a strong part of this team that is as star-laden as it is, but he does provide great defense, particularly in the perimeter. He provides timely scoring, does the little things that has made him so effective in his stint with Golden State, and he was, you know, sitting out due to rest. So there were a couple mitigating factors. But on top of all that, you're right. It was a very balanced game. Miami played very well. They responded early when Golden State made their comeback, as they invariably can and do, because they're just incredible and can shoot so well. Miami braced for that in the third quarter where Golden State has been so dominant lately. Right. I was at yesterday's Orlando's game, and it was incredible to see. Again, they were reeling from the early start time. They had just played a tough game Friday night in Houston. They were still, you know, adjusting to the time change or whatnot. So for them, as Draymond Green said in the post game, it was 9 o'clock for them, even though it was a noon tip off. And they looked really, really shaky. They started off the first quarter with, I think, like 8 or 12. I can't remember now what the number was. Turnovers. They were tied 50-50 with Orlando. And all of a sudden, in the third quarter, as they have over their number of games in the past week or so against Cleveland and Houston, they just exploded. They wound up building a 20-something point lead at that point, and that was just incredible. And then from there, of course, Orlando had no response. So they know how to take those punches as well, and then all of a sudden just put on an incredible area show. But they went 8 of 30 today. And then part of that, I guess, has to be Miami's stellar defense, the system that they've used all season long,
yes,
of running guys off the three-point line, making three-point shots difficult. Look, they still took 33-pointers. That's a pretty decent number for a Golden State team. And they still were only able to connect on 8. Rodney McGruder did a great job on perimeter defense. Mm-hmm. Deion Waiters did a fine job guarding a number of players.
Okara White did a fantastic job at a couple of times. James Johnson was,
yes,
his versatility. I mean, he covers Durant on the last couple, on the last few plays of the game. Really body
Draymond
checks
Green,
him.
He switched on to Draymond too.
Yep. I mean, and then the defensive strategy you mentioned, running guys off the 3-point line. Also, they were doubling Curry and Durant every time they got the ball, and they were chasing Klay Thompson off the line and said, "Just shoot your mid-range jumpers." Klay Thompson had a bad game, 8 of 18. Still
KD
22
was worse.
Points.
One of eight. Just, he hit 12 of 23. His mid-range game was fluid. He got to the rim with ease.
I was talking about Thompson. But yeah, Durant, yeah, same thing, right? They just keep
one of eight.
One of eight, really bad. But they made it hard for him. And like, he really, I don't remember a ton of open shots. And the Warriors pride themselves on getting open shots. And the Heat were so active. Like,
right.
And look, the Warriors, they get this every night, right? They're getting the opposing team's best game of the season. But with that said, they still get tons of open shots. That's the whole point. That's the whole reason you signed Kevin Durant. That's the whole point in that's the whole point of Golden State's system offensively, is to get open jumpers and they have guys that hit open jumpers at historically efficient levels.
Right.
They didn't get that many open shots tonight, and that was huge for them to limit that. And Miami, they played bigger than the sum of their parts. Eric Spoelstra put a fantastic game plan together, really got the most out of their team. And to me, it just always seemed like, okay, the Heat are playing great, but they're going to lose anyway. But let's be happy about how great they're playing for so much of this game. And it seemed at some point that they just couldn't put it together. They gave everything they had in this game and ended up keeping their foot on the gas for the whole 48 minutes and coming up with a win.
Yeah.
Much thanks to Deion Waiters' huge three-pointer. I still can't why the three-point shot. He didn't need a three-pointer. He takes a three-pointer from like 3 feet behind the line. That was just amazing. But
Draymond Green, I'm looking at his stat line now. He went 3 of 8, 0 of 3 from three-point range, just 1 of 4 at the line, had 7 assists, only 3 rebounds, and finished with just 7 points. And, you know, the reputation around the league is that Draymond likes to, quote unquote, get after it, which means he likes to party, and that's fine. And I wonder if he might have been the most notable recipient, if not the only recipient, of the, quote unquote, South Beach flu, because he seemed clearly out of sorts there. I mean, his defense.
I don't know how much I'm buying the South Beach flu thing. I'm not saying that they didn't go out, but look, I live in the area, right? Like, it's not like if the Heat came to San Francisco, all of a sudden they'd be like, and
priests.
I know that they live, I know that these guys live in Oakland, but they party in Oakland, they party also in San Francisco.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be like all of a sudden Miami going to San Francisco, people being like, oh, well, maybe Miami got that SF flu. It's like, no, these guys in party towns know how to handle partying. Like, it's not like the Lakers go to Miami and are like, well, maybe they got the South Beach flu. It's not, and I'm just saying, not, like, the SF bar scene and club scene is pretty good. So it's not like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like this is like they're coming from Utah to Miami and they're like, oh my God, there's so many pretty women and alcohol here. Like, you know, it's not like they're not used to it.
Right. Good point.
Anyway, and pot's legal here. So it's like, you know, they got all this stuff, man. Like, it's like,
pick your poison. Yeah, there's so many things.
They got
to
options,
choose from.
Is what I'm trying to say. But anyway, yeah, I mean, either like even like Kevin Durant with the flu is better than any other player on this roster other than Deion Waiters, right? Like,
of course.
So, whatever. Like a real flu, not even like a made-up hangover flu. And he and he had 27 points, Curry had 21, Thompson had 22. Like, their three guys, their three scorers scored. It was the role players that really didn't play all that well.
Babbitt. I'm sorry. You're talking about their role players. I'm looking at Luke Babbitt's line here, and I know that he was a big factor because he finished 3 of 6, 3 of 4 from 3-point range, 6 rebounds. No more of the
3 for 0 points line. Yeah, I mean, this is 6 rebounds is really good. I mean, look, The Warriors are a team that plays small, and the Heat played even smaller with three guards. They played Dragic, Waiters, and Magruder tonight with Babbitt at the quote-unquote power forward, Whiteside, obviously, at center. And all they created a ton of space for themselves, a ton of space for Dragic and Waiters to do a lot of work in the middle right. of the paint. Like, and Babbitt was a big part of that. I know we've been critical of Babbitt. Give credit where it's due. Babbitt played a great game tonight. He hit the shots that he needed to hit.
True technical foul on Zaza Pachulia.
Yeah, I mean, he got stiff-armed in the face for no reason, but...
Well, there was a kind of reason. Although
he
I think
bumped
it was
him
a little
bit, but that guy's 7 feet tall. He could handle a bump from a small forward. Come on now. Like, there's no reason... Like, it wasn't necessarily eye for an eye. Like, he bumped him in the face.
I think Pachulia, I don't know, I can't really recall too much of his prior years, but I guess he's trying to self-prove to everybody that he still has a place in the league and he has to kind of throw elbows whenever necessary. There was that glaring over Westbrook right. when he fouled him hard.
He's the muscle, right? Like, that's what he plays now. He's the muscle. And as much as Draymond Green is also the muscle, like, he feels like he's the muscle. I guess that's what it is. But
can we talk about Willie Reed, too?
Please, let's talk about anything and everything.
Yeah, Willie Reed, big game today. I think he was part of some major runs there for Miami. We talked about it at the start of the season, you know, that we thought he could be a strong factor, a guy who comes in and plays very similarly to Whiteside, if not necessarily as effective. But I think he was even a little better overall. Just his energy, 7 rebounds. Not to say that Whiteside was bad, even though Whiteside shot poorly, just 4 of 13 for 10 points. He pulled down 15 boards on his own, and he showed an impressive level of effort today.
Four offensive rebounds were good. Were big. Yeah. Any offensive rebound against the Warriors is big. You're taking the possession away from them.
Just one block for Whiteside, but also one block for Willie Reed, and a lot of people on Twitter reacting, saying that Willie Reed is making a strong showing this season, and I think tonight was a very good game for him. Probably, obviously, I think his best of the season.
I want to give some credit also to Spoelstra because of the way he managed Whiteside's minutes, as well as Willie Reed. Every time that Whiteside, I thought, went down the wrong path, a.k.a. holding the ball too much in the post, trying to get his, right?
Right.
Spoelstra pulled him, and he would replace him with Willie Reed or maybe even go small with James Johnson at center. But he pulled him. He knew, like, we're in this game. And Whiteside is very much a reason for that, but he can also be a big reason why we won't be in this game. And
sure,
so I thought he had a really short leash with him, and he was really, really smart. And even towards the end, when the Warriors went to hack a Whiteside with about 3 minutes left,
right.
the Heat pulled him. He missed both of his free throws. Spoelstra pulls him. And Golden State goes on a 6-0 run, but... That run took enough time, and I was very questionable. It was something I was watching, obviously, but that run
didn't
at least
Whiteside
took time
complain
off.
About that?
He did. He went to the bench, and he said, and a couple of reporters tweeted that he said that's bullshit, coach, or something like that. But
yeah,
which is fine. I'm really honestly in the heat of the moment in a competitive game like that, I'm fine with it. That's we talk about Whiteside's immaturities. I'm fine with that. LeBron James would have done the same thing, right? Like, it's
He wouldn't have come out. I mean, that's
right, exactly. At least he came out, right? And
yeah.
But, so they pull him with 3 minutes left, and then the Warriors go on a 6-0 run, but at least the clock was moving at that point, right? Because, like, if Whiteside's still in there, they're hacking, the clock stops, right. And he's going to the foul line, and all of a sudden that clock, you know, the Warriors are extending the game, which is exactly why you hack a Whiteside, hack a Shaq, hack a Jordan, why you do that.
Sure.
So
yeah,
at that point,
you don't want to give Golden State an extra 5 or 6 possessions, right. And that's what would happen if you foul Whiteside and put him at the line, especially when he's not knocking those down. So, I mean, for every 1 point that you might get with Whiteside going to the line, you'll probably give up more chances for them to knock down an open three. And they did cut it to 1 of 5. They were down 10 with just a couple minutes left in the game, weren't they? I mean,
yeah, and at that point afterwards, it was 98 to 96, right? And then there's a minute and a half left. So a minute and a half comes off the clock, and Spoelstra puts Whiteside back in.
Right.
And at that point, now you're playing, like, you know, he comes out for certain possessions, whatever, you know, all that, which he did. But I thought Spoelstra really managed it well. I thought Spoelstra outcoached Steve Kerr completely in that game. And maybe that was really between Spoelstra and Deion Waiters, you know, Spoelstra being the best coach there and Deion Waiters being the best player there. That was the difference in the game. Let's see. What else can we talk about here?
Goran Dragic kind of struggled a little bit. I mean, probably having to exert himself a lot defensively. He shot only 5 of 14 despite the strong run over the last few games. Finished with 19 points. Was able to hit 8 of 13 free throws. Finished with 4 rebounds, 5 assists. So a good game. Also 4 turnovers, unfortunately.
I hear you. I thought he played a really good game doing the little things. I thought that the Warriors had a defensive game plan. They know that he likes to do that Steve Nash thing where he goes under the rim and pops out the other side and tries to find somebody. We talked about the officiating. Dragic was on that bat. Was on the bad end of that officiating as well. Like, he was getting slammed every time he went down the rim. I mean, Draymond Green was extending his arms. Kevin Durant would, you know, flog him as he was going down. Like, he was getting hit every time. I thought he got the shit beat out of him the whole game. And he's, as he does always, he stays in there and he hangs tough. And I thought he found open guys. He had a few more hockey assists than assists. I thought he was a really big reason why Miami's ball movement was so good. Because without Dragic and without Waiters, the ball movement was fantastic all night. And the player movement was really good all night. The Heat made the Warriors work on defense. Dragic was a big part of that.
Yeah, James Johnson really helped a lot. You know, his versatility on defense, mm-hmm. like we talked about before, but on offense, had a pretty good game as well. He was cutting to the rim. He got open for a few dunks there to help Miami either extend or create a lead. They were timely baskets. It was just 4 of 8 for 9 points, but still, I think he played a big part offensively, a small part, but one that was crucial defensively, like we said. I mean, just his ability to help limit Durant, particularly along the perimeter, and to make things uncomfortable for their players. That was a great part of why Miami was able to limit Golden State, the best three-point shooting team in the league, to just 28%.
Can we talk a little bit about, let's just wildly speculate here.
Okay.
And talk about what this Dion Waiters means to the team.
Okay.
And to Dion Waiters himself. But does Dion Waiters playing at this level, not scoring 33 points a night, not hitting game-winning threes every night over the Warriors, but playing at this relative level, does this change the Heat's outlook this season? I mean, they're on a 4-game winning streak. They're 15-30. How many games out of the East are they? And I say wildly speculate, right? So just, you know, bear with me on this and just kind of hear me out. But I'm looking up the standings right now to see how far.
So am I. So there's 7 games out. The Chicago Bulls are in the 8th seed right now with 22 wins, so just below 500. So Miami needs to find some way to crawl near 500 for them to be even in the conversation.
That it's not going to happen. So the playoffs are out of the question. But like that's too far. Even wildly speculating, that's too big a hill to climb, right? So
I mean, you're looking at, what was it,
40-ish games left, 39 games left, something.
No, 45, 37 games left. 37 games, not much.
Yeah.
So they'd have to go like 30-7, and that doesn't seem likely.
Yeah, no way. So anyway, for Waiters, I mean, the Heat are gonna fight. They're gonna in every game, right? They're as far as tanking goes, they're not actually tanking. I mean, maybe some phantom injuries happen here and there, whatever. But the players on the court are gonna be playing hard, and I don't see this organization taking Waiters off the court, even if he's playing at this MVP type level. Just because they're not an organization that screws over guys on 1-year deals, which is kind of what Dion Waiters is on. He can opt in next year to his contract. Yeah. I wouldn't rule that out. I'm not saying it's going to happen, and if he plays like this, it would be insane for him to do it, but it's not like, you know, it's an option, so you can't take it off the table. He likes Miami a lot. Like,
he seems to, right?
Yeah, and what he was talking about in that article that I mentioned earlier with Miami Heat Mag, I didn't get to use this quote in the article, but he did mention that he's really, really happy here and he wants to be here. So I don't know if that means he's expecting them to make max cap room for him, or if he's planning on opting in to his $3 million deal next year, or maybe something in between. But either way, he seems happy here. He seems to be benefiting from, you know, the Heat's organization, their culture, their ability to just get guys in shape and to get guys to lock into basketball as a priority. He really seems to be benefiting from all of that. And he finally seems to be healthy for the first time this season. So if Waiters is playing at this relative level, what happens to him after this year? What do you think?
I think he'll opt out.
Yeah.
I think he has to. I think he wound up losing quite a bit of money last season when he opted out, didn't take Oklahoma City's qualifying offer, which they immediately pulled off the table and made him a free agent, which is why he was able to sign in Miami. So I think for a guy like him, he'll want more money. Now, will he want to break the bank elsewhere? I don't know. It's hard to predict. I mean, I think player in the NBA.
Yeah, and given this new CBA, right, like you're going to have guys like Gordon Hayward probably re-signing. We talked about this in the mailbag on Monday.
Sure.
Re-signing, and you know, who knows if Blake Griffin is going to leave, and if he does, why would he leave from Miami? We've talked about all this. There's really Boogie Cousins, it looks like he's re-signing. I don't know what guys are going to be available. Durant, Curry, why would they leave the Warriors unless not to join Dion Waiters in Miami? But if Dion Waiters plays at this level, is he... Oh, Rudy Gay, also, his Achilles tear, like he's probably off the market, right? So it's like if Dion Waiters plays at this relative level, he's only 25. He was the former fourth overall pick. He really never got in a situation that was good for him. I mean, he was in a really bad Cleveland team for a couple of years.
Sure.
LeBron James comes in, doesn't want to deal with Dion Waiters, and even maybe then he had some immaturity issues and ships him off to Oklahoma City, where he had a good year, but obviously Oklahoma City rebuilding the way that they were just didn't see Waiters as a part of that. And I don't know, man. Like, maybe now he's finally getting the opportunity to kind of show out, and he's 25, and it's not out of the realm of possibility that at 25 years old he is now living up to a fourth pick in the draft. And like I said, I'm wildly speculating here, but if after this season, does he become Miami's big free agent addition? You know, like, is that, like, what is the percent chance of that being the case
right now? I mean, at this point it feels like it's virtually 100%, but I just I think a lot of people would expect, you know, Riley to look at his performance over the last couple games and say, yeah, this is a guy that we could potentially build around, who's not scared of the moment and will do whatever it takes and does things efficiently if he continues to play like this. Now, that's the whole thing, though. Such a small sample size. And I think you and I, being as heavily invested in his success as we are, we're more than willing to say, oh, yeah, this is the kind of player that we can build around. But I'm not sure that that's realistic either. So you have to look at what happens over the next 37-odd games. If he can be not at this level, it's impossible for him to maintain this, sure. I think. You know, there's going to be nights where his shots at the rim aren't going to fall, or his shots in the perimeter aren't going to fall. But there are things that we've talked about before that he does well. He does create shots for other people. He does, you know, pass the ball effectively. There will be turnovers here and there, but he's also a very good defender. I mean, he guards guys much bigger than him. He uses his strength.
He looks forward to it. He looks forward to guarding guys. Yeah, he's a competitor, man. And I mean, if you didn't know that before tonight, now you do. He rose up to the moment. There is something to be said about that. He exclaimed that court was his shit, which is, you know, whatever you say, that's yours. You can have it. But I wonder now, without the Heat, I mean, obviously James Johnson, right, having a fantastic year. Showing
okay, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, so we're getting there, right?
Chris Bosh's money comes off the books. Do you split that into re-signing Waiters and James Johnson and hope that maybe you get a nice draft pick in the 12 to 15 spot that you can help kind of include in the Miami's rebuild? You get Justice Winslow back, maybe at a year better. You know, Josh Richardson stays healthy, et cetera. I mean, that's the guy we haven't even talked about much this season because he's been in and out of the lineup. But, I mean, Miami, their situation isn't so desperate, especially if you can get Waiters at 75% of what he's been over the last couple of games.
I mean, Dragic, Waiters, Whiteside, Winslow coming back healthy, right? Because he's going to have that full, basically a full year to reboot. And whoever you're picking in the lottery...
Rab, right? Isn't that a guy you're high on?
I like Rab. I don't know if he's... I mean, I like him. I don't know if he's a lottery pick. I don't know what the Heat think of him. But you're now projecting that if Waiters plays at this relative level, right? Now we're doing that like wild speculation that they fall out of the top five, maybe a 10 to 15, 14 pick. But I still think that this Heat team is bad enough to stay with a top five pick. So even if it's... I mean, hell, honestly, you could do Dragic, you know... Lonzo Ball, a guy that every Heat fan wants right now. Dragic, Lonzo Ball, Dion Waiters as the third guard, Winslow as your power forward, Whiteside, and we roll out a three-guard lineup like this every night or something like that. But there's, I don't know, or, you know, Dragic, Waiters, Jonathan Isaac. Winslow, Whiteside, something like that. With James Johnson, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson off the bench. I mean, this is maybe you're right. Maybe it's not as desperate as it looks. I don't know. If Waiters, basically what we're trying to say here is if Waiters plays, he's not going to score 33 points a game. That is historically great. If he plays at this relative level, then, and that define relative level however you want, but if he plays his best basketball of his career, as he is in these last few games going forward, he is going to force the Heat to make some decisions. And that's all. And that's basically what we're saying here, is because now you have Waiters, you have James Johnson, Willie Reed, who we didn't mention.
Right. He's got a player option for his deal, and he looks, yeah. I mean, he's probably going to cash out.
Right, absolutely. So you have some of these guys now with Pat Riley, guys that he signed to these one-year deals, who may present some, these guys are going to get paid. These three guys are going to make more money than they're making this season. And it's a question of how much money are they going to make? How much money would they be willing to discount the Heat, if any, to stay in Miami?
They won't.
Right. Well, so now.
I mean, I just don't think that's
why I say if any. But yeah, I mean, it's a question, right? Like, this is something that Riley has always gone to players with, is like, take $2 million off, no state income tax, we make you better, whatever. It's just, sure. You know, it's something that's going to be presented to him.
I mean, so. Dwayne Dedman took a relatively cheap deal to go to San Antonio. I think he's originally from Texas. And so there was a fit there. I mean, they were, you know, going to lose Duncan. So there was an opportunity for him to get some playing time. Orlando didn't really want to re-sign him. And he's just turned into a much more efficient player.
James Johnson's been around the league. Like, he's bounced around a lot of teams. He's a veteran. Maybe he might be at a situation where he's like, I'll take a million or $2 million off of where I can get somewhere else, if just to stay in Miami. And Deion Waiters has bounced around enough. He has mentioned several times that he feels comfortable here and he likes it here. So it might be a situation where he's like, I don't want to keep moving. I can be really good here, and signs even a 2-year deal at a relatively cheap contract or something, where he can enter free agency. He can enter the free agent market again in a couple of years or something like that.
So James Johnson, 5 for $60 million.
Ooh, now I have to do division. I'm not good at that. How much is
that's
that
12
per year? Yeah, I think James Johnson, right, is like $12 million a year. Deion Waiters.
But then again, we said that about Luol Deng last year, right?
And
then
yeah, he wound up taking... didn't the Lakers come in with like, didn't the Wizards offer him that? And then the Lakers came out with like some extravagant, like they what did they pay him? $18 million a year?
Four for 62. They went,
yeah,
dead.
That was like way out of, like, they just, because the whole Lakers thing, not to go off track, but you're right. But like the Lakers with him and Timofey Mozgov were like, we just got to get some guys. Let's get in the market, get our guys, offer them what it takes to get them to accept right now. We don't want to do bidding wars, and get out and let's start planning for the season. That was like, according to reports, that was their whole thing. So they offered Deng an extreme deal, and Deng was like all ready to go to Washington. And he's like, oh my God, you're offering me how much? Okay, I guess. But anyway, you're right though. That could happen, right? But like, so James Johnson, I think, guesstimate like $12 million a year sounds about right. Willie Reed, 8-ish to $10 million a year, because teams still tend to overpay for big guys. 8 or $10 million a year. I think the mid-level exception is going to be $8 million a year. So that's also something interesting to watch. If Miami could say, like, you're getting $10 million from this team, but you could stay here, we'll give you $8 million to sign with the MLE. That could free up some cap space. And then Waiters,
Derek Williams, and Williams $5 million a year comes off the books,
right? Waiters. I don't know how much, like, because given his history, even if he plays at this relative level, I don't think he makes much more than James Johnson.
2 for $30 million?
Something like that. Exactly. Yeah, I think that sounds appropriate. He's not, as much as we say, like, max out Deion Waiters, he's not going to get the max. Unless he literally scores 33 points and beats the Warriors for every game for the remainder of the season, I don't see a way he gets the max.
If he single-handedly carries Miami into the playoffs somehow and a first-round upset, then people will be like, yeah, this is the guy we expected when he was drafted for.
Exactly. It all finally came together for him. Yeah, Babbitt, his deal comes off the books.
Well, it's only under $1 million, so it's not too bad.
Yeah, and then...
you got to ship Tyler Johnson out, free up some money.
So, you know, the Heat have some... He could have some decisions to make. We won't jump the gun too much, but we're going to enjoy
We're already talking about giving him $30 million. I mean, yeah, I think we've jumped the gun pretty effectively.
Just for whatever it's worth, after tonight, we're recording this obviously the night of. The only way he can have all of my money. I don't even care anymore. Like, just all of the very little money I have, he can have all of it.
Sure. So, I mean, your girlfriend may not think so, but I mean, I'm sure
she doesn't need to know. She's like, why haven't you paid for dinner in like 3 weeks? I'm like, I can't talk about it. Dion Waiters. just like change the conversation. Did you see Dion Waiters? Like, yeah, Wes, we talk about this every day. It's like, I know, but it was amazing.
I love seeing the Twitter timeline and everybody across the country in basketball Twitter just mentioning Dion and his big game. And then when he hits the shot, just everybody erupting. Like, I know there's like a hint of irony, pretty significant hint of irony when everybody starts talking about Dion and everything that he does and calling him 3-Eon, you know, and things like this. I mean, there's just so much to it. But
yeah,
Kobe Wade. Yeah, there's so many different.
The Run DMC pose now is a meme. It's become a meme.
It will. Absolutely.
It's just like a reaction meme now. But I mean, yeah, it's cool to see that. It's cool to see that everybody. You're right. There's a lot of irony kind of laced in there. But
sure. It
is cool to see Dion Waiters as now like the lovable buffoon who just somehow hit a 3-pointer. I mean, this is, I hope that Heat fans, we have talked a lot about how Waiters is a scapegoat and unfairly so. I really hope that this starts to shift the tide into appreciating a little bit more of what Dion Waiters does.
Oh, yeah. It reminds me. I wrote that piece, which I'm going to immediately tweet out because it was about Dion, I think, before the start of the season or right at the start. And then I think it's perfect. I mean, you and I, we've been consistent. Look, I mean, you can say whatever you want to. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of people riding on that Waiters bandwagon or rowboat, I suppose, the Waiters Island. But it's going to be a dinghy, you know, maybe a couple holes here. You know, you're probably using a rusty old pail to scoop Walker out. But, yeah, there'll be a rowboat dinghy on the way to Waiters Island, and we'll have been there. We're established.
We're drinking pina coladas on our decks. Like, we're sitting pretty on Waiters Island, man. We've been here. We're like, oh, yeah, party's here.
I love it. What a game. What a game. Look, they could all fall apart, and I don't even know when they play next. We could lose the next 10 games. It wouldn't shock me at all. But I'll have at least enough energy to carry me through that 10-game loss, to a 10-loss streak, to be honest with you, because it was just so exciting. Against, again, the best team in the league by far, you know, and strong showing. And then to have Dion Waiters play the perfect Dion Waiters game, it was just amazing.
If this was the peak of the season, if this was the climax of the season, I am perfectly fine with that. And that's a good way to go out on this podcast, at least, is, look, this season has been shitty. But it's been a struggle. And you and I have even talked about how it's hard to have to watch these games and podcast
after
it. Like, we've been very open about that struggle. And for a lot of fans are feeling that struggle, they're feeling like that, just that tiredness of watching this team lose every night. But embrace this. It doesn't matter if they lose the next game or the next 10 games, like you said, this still counts, and this is still a huge win. And it's, if this is the climax of the season, bask in this memory, let it be there. This is a great memory in Miami Heat history, not just this season, for a lot of different reasons. It's just, this is a great moment, and just enjoy it and appreciate it, and jump on the Dion Waiters rowboat and come join us on Dion Waiters Island.
Nice.
All right. That's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes or however you listen to podcasts, we appreciate it. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities, also taking all Dion Waiters questions. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. If you aren't subscribed already, please do so and get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Helps our position on the iTunes charts, helps other people discover the show. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
This is your city, Dion. Hey, Wes again. Did you know that podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with a sponsor than listeners of any other medium? If your company is looking to reach a male audience between the ages of 18 and 44, you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Heat is listened to by 95% men, 74% of which are between the ages of 18 and 44. Plus, our rates are reasonable, or you can decide that for yourself. Email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com to find out more about sponsoring Locked On Heat and engaging the audience you want to reach.